Hello and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and this show that we're going to be doing today, I really wish I were in a position to show you the actual video, because we're going to be talking about self-sustainability. And this is a topic that in the past couple of days has come up in conversations that I've had with people, and most of us will say, I don't know that I could be self-sustaining. And my guest today, Marjorie Wildcraft, has put together an absolutely wonderful video package. In fact, over 250,000 have been sold. And this one is, it's titled, Grow Your Own Groceries, Turn Your Backyard into a Food Production System. Is this something you think you might be interested in knowing more about? Well, I hope so, because Marjorie is going to be with us, and in fact, she is with us right now, and we're going to be talking about this woman's journey into an arena of personal experience for herself as well as her family. Let's see if the adventure might be something we might want to explore ourselves. Hello, Marjorie, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'll tell you, you're a lady that's got a lot of pluck. That's all I can say. Because when I was watching your videos, and you were so down to earth, what I loved about it is, one, you didn't try to come off as a Hollywood screen actress, you know, with every hair in place and the makeup, you know, in order and everything else. You just showed life with the environment that you're in as it is and how you transformed it into something that is sustaining for your family in so many different ways. Marjorie, what started you on this journey? I mean, there are people that would see this video and think, oh my Lord, she's nuts. But you've really shown how you can do things. What started you to go in this direction?
Well, I'm very much involved with my community and a community activist. And there was a group forming that wanted to have fresh vegetables at the local elementary school. And I said, I'm on this, totally. And I thought, well, this will just be a matter of organizing the farmers. And there was a group of us that were meeting regularly. It turned out there was grant money for this. The school wanted it. The teachers wanted it. Everybody knows that when kids eat better, their school grades improve, they're easier to manage, they don't have as much behavioral problems. Mm-hmm. We thought this was just going to be a slam dunk thing. A bunch of us in the community would be able to organize. And it was about the third meeting, and I'd noticed that the one farmer that I knew had stopped coming after the first meeting. It was about in the third meeting that we're sitting down and saying, okay, well, let's figure out what farmers are going to supply this. And it was me. There happened to be, on this little group, there happened to be the president of the Texas Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, and there happened to be Forrest Arnold, who was the Austin Organic Gardeners president. I mean, there was a lot of people. Between all of us, we knew pretty much everybody in Texas who was growing organically. And we sat down, and I was shocked to find out there were not enough local, sustainable, organic farmers within my county. We'd have to draw from a tri-county area in order to get enough vegetables for one small elementary school.
And oh, my goodness.
I was in the community center. You know, we'd rented the community center, and you know that there's these big empty halls with all that reverberating sound because the acoustics are awful, and I couldn't stop shaking. I couldn't stop shaking. I mean, it was for hours afterwards, because I realized that there we all have this idea there's a huge amount of food growing out in the countryside or something like that. And here I live in this small rural community. There's no food growing here. And then, you know, the Dallas Independent School District contacted us and said, hey, we hear what you're doing over there. We'd love it. And we had to tell them. We did the there's not enough locally grown food. And I was just, you know, what can I do mm-hmm. as an individual? And I said, well, farmers come from gardeners. And I think the real solution to this problem is going to be people learning how to grow their own food in their backyard with what they've got. And I said, mm-hmm. how do I do this? And I had no idea. I mean, I was a professional investor at the time, and I completely dismantled my business. And so this is the problem I'm going to focus on. And it was a good thing. I also had a sense I was a real estate investor, and I also had a sense the market was going to change. So we managed to dismantle my business before it was destroyed anyway. But that's all I've been passionately looking at for the last decade is what are the easiest. And because you got kids, you know, you want it to be fun and simple, and what's the easiest way to grow really nutritious food for people who are just like you and me, just too busy to get almost anything extra into their schedule, but yet food is so important.
Oh, it absolutely is. You know, when you look at history and you look at any nation, usually wars have been started many times because of a lack of food. They, you go through history, this is just something that has prevailed. They might guise it under something else, might say it's for religious reasons or whatever, but typically those areas that have been agriculturally rich have been the ones that have been desired. Why? Because you have to live to eat. If you don't, you know, I mean, eat to live, excuse me, I reversed it. You're eating to live. And if you don't have food, you have sickness, you have a lack of productivity because people don't have the strength to work. I mean, you can study the history of China, and you can see it repeated over and over again. And one of the gifts in the United States was the fact that so much was agricultural. And at one time in our history, and I may be off a few percentage points, but we had 97% of the population that were growing their own food. About 3% of the population was entered into other productivity. As we became more agriculturally prolific, then people were able to diversify to the point that we have stores where we don't think twice. Most kids don't have an idea what even a chicken looks like, to be perfectly honest. They know that they go into the market, everything is clean, and everything is there. They pick it up. If there's a little speck on something, ew, I don't like this, and it's not perfect, and they put it back. It's really a phenomena that is relatively new. It started about, I'd say the 60s, and we have become very proficient. But the sad thing is exactly what you've mentioned. In communities, we do not have enough self-sustaining agricultural production. Things are being shipped in from all over. And farming is a tough life. And that's what I love about your video. When I was watching this, I looked at it and I said, holy Christmas, there is no way that a kid in school today, to the best of my knowledge, has a clue about the reality of what it is to live on a farm. They don't get it. They don't realize what it takes to make things happen. Now, your video, what I noticed right off the bat was your clarity in the beginning. You said, this is not easy. This is something that I'm putting to a video because I have had to learn, and it's the result, at the time you did the video, of 9 years of practical, realistic experience. And I thought, my gracious, this is awesome. Now, let's take something right from the beginning. You're in Texas. What area of Texas are you in?
I'm in Central Texas, and we're at the intersection of 5 different bioregions, which makes it a very, very, very harsh place to grow in.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you brought out. One of the first things that you brought out was you have to be aware of your soils, your conditions, drought, all kinds of stuff. I think of the early pioneers and what they went through. I'm up here in the Pacific Northwest. Now, everything is lush and green, and people would think, oh, this is such a fabulous place. Everything's going to be hunky-dory, and it's growing. Well, I got news for you. We've got more rocks than dirt, especially out where we live. So
everywhere I go, everybody says, oh, but where we live is difficult. And actually, one of the biggest accolades I got was from Peter Bain, who's the editor of the Permaculture Activist, which is the premier permaculture magazine in the United States. And he said, you know, Marjorie, you've got it really tough there, but with climate change and everything that's going on, actually, you're demonstrating what everybody needs to know, because everybody is facing so many changes so rapidly, all kinds of, I'm getting reports from gardeners all over the world that patterns that used to be are no longer happening anymore. They're having to adapt and change so much. So yes,
that is very true. And that's not unusual. People may be talking about, oh, this, that, or the other thing. But what they don't realize is that Mother Nature is inconsistent. She may be consistent for a while, but she's going to be all of a sudden saying, thanks, but this is the time for change. And all we have to do is have a slight shift in the tilt of the Earth axes, and the weather front is going to change like nobody's business. And we're seeing a lot of things that are occurring. And a lot of it we just don't have any control over. People like to be arrogant, but you don't have control over a lot of stuff. Let's talk about some of the things that you've learned.
Well, that control is what actually also got me into this, because at the time I was awakening, I was realizing I naively went along and thought, yeah, you know, the government's kind of overspending too much, but I had no idea how utterly corrupt our government is. And when I opened to that, you know, that makes you angry. What do you do with that, you know? Or I was finding out about all kinds of things. I'm like, what do you do about it? Most of them are out of our control. What's in my control? I've got a hose and a backyard, and that's half of the solution right there.
That's half of it right there.
So, yes, you know, growing your own food, you know, collecting some rainwater, becoming self-reliant, it's just good in so many levels. And the wonderful thing that has evolved for me out of it, so I came into it from a place of fear and panic and anger and concern, and since then, my body has gotten so much stronger and so much healthier, and I feel so much clearer, and life is so much more enjoyable. But the connection and the circles of life, I hadn't realized I had been looking for that all of my life. I'll give you one example. A couple of years ago, you know, Craigslist, and somebody said, free, I've got a whole bunch of spineless prickly pear for free if you want it, come pick it up. So a friend of mine went there, and we picked up these big pads of prickly pear, and I planted them in the ground in different areas. Always want to do different areas because you don't know which one's going to be the best place for them necessarily.
Right.
Anyway, those plants have been growing, and I've been, you know, tending them, whatever they need, you know, pull some grass away from them or help them out with whatever they need. And now they're producing fruits, and I'm getting to eat those fruits, and I'm connected with that plant. But it even goes deeper, that a while ago I had a severe cut, a laceration that started to get infected, and I used the prickly pear pads to make a poultice and pull out that infection and heal myself. That plant healed me. It helped me significantly. Not only is it feeding me, but it's giving me medicine. You know, when I walk by those plants, I am in awe of the magic that is involved and the whole process that's going on. And you know, they're big, beautiful plants now, and they were these little pads I had picked up for free, almost garbage, you know. But that whole connection, and that I hadn't realized how beautiful that is and how much I had missed that in everything I had ever done in my life before. And I'd had a wonderful, sexy, fun, adventurous life, but that beautiful connection was never there, and now I have it. It's wonderful.
Right, and that's getting back in touch with how vitally important it is for us to be good custodians of whatever environment we're in. I want to talk about something that's really a big issue, and that is water. You're in a part of the country where drought is not uncommon. You have how many acres? I don't remember how many acres you have.
We have about 35, but to be honest with you, I only really intensively work about 2 acres, and quite frankly, the heart of everything is just in an area that's about 1,800 square feet, like a backyard. So you don't need a lot.
And you are dealing with water, and I would like for you to talk about the water systems that you use, because you have ways of utilizing water as to what goes out into the yard, and how you even utilize urine, which the Chinese did for millennia. They had learned about that a long time ago. They would have their big holding tanks. That's how I will describe them. And it was put in there, and then after a certain amount of time, then they would go and they'd put it on the field. And someone listening to this would say, oh, Donna, this is terrible. It's disease, et cetera, the other. What people don't realize is that urine really is quite sterile. Sterile, I mean, it's not infiltrated with a lot of unhealthy stuff. It's different from the fecal matter. But what you've got is something that is really nutrient-rich. How are you doing this? What are you doing? How are you utilizing this?
Well, let me step back and tell people why they would want to go into that yuck. And the real secret to a green thumb, and believe me, I did not have a green thumb when I started out. In fact, every houseplant I had ever owned had died. And the only reason I had a front lawn was because it was there before I had gotten there. I was business, engineering, corporate, investment oriented. I had no clue about the weather. The rain would inconvenience me because I had to have an umbrella. But other than that, I had no connection to that at all. But the secret to growing big, beautiful, healthy vegetables is a lot of fertility, having a really rich soil and having constantly adding more nutrients into your soil. And how do you get those nutrients? I mean, now, yeah, we go pop down to the store and buy a bag of bat guano or, whatever fertilizers we want. But if you remember when I started out, I said, how do we do this on our own without being connected to the commercial system? In case that commercial system doesn't exist, or just because how do we do it on our own? Because that's the most empowering and fulfilling way to do it. And your own urine has the biggest element that the plants want is nitrogen. They love nitrogen. And even though our air is about 70% nitrogen, it's not in a form that's available to plants generally. We don't use nitrogen, although when we breathe it in, it gets absorbed by our body to some extent, and it's basically a byproduct, and it goes out in our urine as well as when we're eating meat. The protein, somehow when the protein gets digested, there's extra nitrogen. It turns out that your urine has about 18% highly plant-available nitrogen. So you take the urine and just pee in a bucket, and then after a while, dilute it 10-1 and, saturate the roots of the plants with it. Of course, as you're getting ready to harvest or you're getting time to pick, you don't want to do it at that time just for everybody has those concerns. But certainly when they're young and growing, when they need that nutrition the most, I've read a study that you produce enough nitrogen within your own body to provide half to all of the nitrogen that the plants that you need to eat would need. Boy, talk about self-reliant. And talk about connection again. I mean, most of us, what products do you really produce that's useful for anything? I'm an engineer and I make drawings or I do this. No. It's much simpler than that. You urinate. That's a product you produce that is just fundamental and innate to you that is unbelievably valuable to the plants around you. And those plants around you are unbelievably valuable to you for what they produce, and it's a part of a whole circle.
It's a fascinating concept that so many people do not associate with. And this is something that's coming more and more to the forefront. Now, you have holders for water. You have big containers for water. And you have rainwater. One of the biggest concerns with many people is standing water because you can have algae grow, you can have mosquitoes breed. How is it that you are able to keep water, especially during drought times? Because you have to irrigate. You have to be able to feed your plants. They need the water. So what have you done? You've got a design. You have a very specific design.
Yeah, we ended up using poly tanks for that, and the key to keeping it without algae or the other worst thing that can happen is a squirrel or something falls in there and dies and then contaminates your water system. And the way to keep that from happening is to make the system tight with your connections so you're not having any place for anything to fall in and you're not allowing sunlight in there. Now, historically, every roof in Texas, and we're going back 100, 150 years, every roof in Texas had rainwater collection off of it. And they didn't have poly tanks. They would make tanks out of the local cedar that grows here. And the local cedar has a natural antibiotic and insecticide type component to it that doesn't really harm you for drinking or for using as irrigation. But they would make these big tanks out of cedar using metal bands to hold it together. I don't have time to go into that level of sustainability, but they can be well built. And there's so much, I know some people, there's a wonderful saying that says, You know, don't pray for rain if you're not using what you get already.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a roof, well, again, you're halfway there. You know, put up some gutters, channel that into a tank. In the DVD set that I sell, there's a bonus CD that includes a library of documents to support the information we present in the video. And one of those documents is a whole book on how to build a rainwater collection system, you know, different sizes, how much you need to know for the, you know, you can only have a gutter length for so long before you need it to drop down. How can you clean that water before it goes into the tank? It's called a roof washer. Lots of things involved in there, and then examples of other systems that have been built. It's a wonderful book. It's a Texas rainwater collection book, which the state of Texas graciously gave me permission to include in that library. And I highly recommend. Water is a huge, huge issue, even in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes,
where
it
you,
is.
You know, you get so many inches of rain per year, but again, there's those periods when you don't. And if you're relying on your own food supply, there are times when you're going to have to irrigate. And everybody I've talked to in every region, basically you do need to collect water. Here it's much more extreme because we clearly are on the edge of a desert.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a requirement everywhere. People are not aware that the next wars will be fought over water.
That is true. That is true. Water is going to be, and it is in my mind's view even now, more precious than gold. And I know people get all excited about various things that are going on with the economy, but being in an environment where you have water available and where you're going to have that precipitation, there's a lot of areas in this country that if it wasn't for the water siphoning that is being done, like of the Colorado, et cetera, California would be in deep, you know, really in deep trouble. Because they're desert. California basically is like Texas in many respects. It has so many dry, dry, dry areas. And you really have a challenge, especially with the denser populations. So it's something that is coming up that is going to be exceedingly valuable. It is at this point, but it's becoming more so. And your points about climate change are significant. Now, you have got 35 acres of property. You have found, and I had to chuckle when I came to this part in your CD, where you realized when it came to getting protein that you had to be very, very thoughtful. Now, you have a few chickens, but you said you found that chickens, there were responsibilities, obviously, with these creatures, and you have wild critters around. You have your raccoons. You have coyotes, you have snakes, you have all kinds of critters that just love chicken.
For
good reason. They taste good.
They taste good. They,
you know, that's part of the natural thing in life. And you had said that you only found it was efficient and effective for you to have so many roosters and so many chickens because there was a dealing with waste. You had to feed them. You had to put them in safe quarters. And I chuckle because I think of how many of the early pioneers had to go through the very same thing and the very same battles they had to go through. And you bring in your dogs in this CD and talk about how vital dogs are. So let's chat about having animals that you grow for protein. You use rabbits frequently. In fact, you have a segment on your video where you go into the butchering of rabbits. So let's sort of touch on these different parts here and bring them together.
Sure. The chickens, and I was also surprised to find, historically, the early pioneers rarely ate chicken. And we all think, oh, I'm going to move out to the country and a chicken in every pot on this every Sunday, right? And
mm-hmm.
I've even been surprised how many people living out in the country think, well, you know, if it all hits the fan, we're just going to live off the chickens. But really, chickens, they need a lot of grain if you want to upkeep a large flock of them. If you want to have a chicken every week, you need to have a flock of about, you know, 50 to 70 chickens because you're eating one a week. It takes so long for them to grow and reproduce and come, get up to size, and then you're going to have some loss. You know, you just need a large size. But, well, if you're going to have a flock that big, you're going to need to feed them, which means you're going to need to grow grain. and other things for them. And that just ends up getting to be way too much work. And historically, people found that to be way too much work. So I found that rabbits were a lot easier food source to raise. They mostly eat grass and other forage, which is a lot easier for me to get a hold of and grow. And plus, it's the same benefit of being a small animal. So I don't need refrigeration. You know, we butcher the rabbit right before we cook it and eat it. And we feed the intestines to the dogs. I'm eating more and more of the organ meat of the animals. And that whole being able to eat meat was a whole fascinating journey. When I started out, I was a raw vegan. I was exploring the raw vegan, you know, fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds, and that's all I was eating. And I found out, oh, that's an extraordinarily difficult diet to grow. And the easiest food source to grow in almost every bioregion I've visited, and I've been traveling many places since then, and meat is by far easier to grow than plant foods. And it's kind of a simple, when you start to think about it, for a plant, for example, I'm out in my garden right now, I need to bring water to it. I need to shade it if it gets too hot, or I need to cover it if it's going to get too cold, or I need to bring fertility to it, and I'm, you know, constantly protecting it from other things. If I've got a small group of rabbits, or I've got, say, geese in the orchard, you know, if it gets too hot, they move into the shade. Or if they need water, they go get water where I've set it up for them. Or, you know, I bring them some food, but, you know, a lot of times it's just set up. They move around and they take care of themselves by themselves much better, whereas plants are fixed and they need me to come do a lot more work for them.
Mm-hmm.
So animals actually are much, much easier to grow. And for somebody starting out, animals are easier to grow because it's real easy to go get a bag of rabbit pellets and get started right away, or maybe cut some grass and get started right away, whereas plants, you know, you've got to learn a whole lot. So I highly recommend animal products. And, of course, when I started getting into it, you know, I said, well, if I'm going to do this, I'd better learn the whole thing. And I did learn how to butcher. And I have to say that's another process that you want to get really in touch with life and death and understanding your place in the world and having a much deeper connection to what's going on. You know, start raising your own animals that you are eating and then eat them. And it sounds harsh, and to some extent it is, and to some extent life is harsh. But to open to that brings you to levels of maturity that are astonishing, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, and that's one of the gifts that I believe your video offers. And when I was watching all of this, and on your first CD, you talk about water, you talk about the gardening and how you had to learn what areas in your 1,800 square feet were most efficient for certain things, planting trees so that they were going to serve a multiple purpose, not just providing fruit, perhaps, or nuts, but also that it contributes back into the soil. It really involves so much. And you've grown so much through learning it. And then I noticed when you were ready to butcher the animal, it's as if you had a sort of a ritual that you went through, respecting and honoring the life that was going to be feeding the family. And you show how it's done, which I think very few people have ever seen an animal butchered. And a lot of people listening to this might say, oh, this is hideous. But they've never had to live off the land. And this is something, I don't care what culture you go to in the world, there is that aspect. And in life feeds life. Not decay feeding life, but life itself feeds life. And it is really the way you present this on the video is just incredibly, incredibly fine. You talk about perennials, how they are valuable. You talk about adding to the soil. You go into so many things about the interrelationship. And that, to me, is priceless, because I think that, as you said, it gives you a very healthy respect when you realize that we have a responsibility as custodians, what we do and how we deal with aspects of life. Now, I know we are just about out of time, Marjorie. You have a website, Grow Your Own Groceries. Grow Your Own Groceries. And for those of you listening, you might be a city gal like I am, but there are things that we need to be aware of. And I was talking with someone not too long ago about a community garden, and maybe you'd want to support something like this that would enable the community to get involved if people were apartment dwellers, et cetera. Maybe it would be a good way to, for you to practice your green thumb, if you will. Marjorie, you don't have your own radio show, but you have a blog, don't you?
If you go to my website, there's a way to sign up, and we'll continue to keep you in the loop. And I'm still exploring what's going to be the best outlet. Should I develop the YouTube channel or not? But go to the website, and you'll be able to stay connected with me there at growyourowngroceries.com.
Well, Marjorie, this has been delightful. Thank you very much for being my guest today. I so appreciate your being with us. And when you come out with your next book or your next batch of information, be sure you send it, because I think it's very, very important to share.
Well, thank you so much, Donna. I'll do that. We're working on another one called Barefoot Dentistry. That's a good one. Yeah, how to take care of your teeth, and I'll keep you updated on that. But for now, grow your own groceries, and that's the health and the quality food is the cornerstone of everything else that I do. And it's
absolutely true. Absolutely true. This is Donna Sebo. My guest has been Marjorie Wildcraft. Her production is Grow Your Own Groceries. Go to growyourowngroceries.com. Find out more, because this is something that I think, if you know of anybody who's a teacher, anyone that really wants to become more aware of how to be self-sufficient, I really think this is a wonderful, wonderful product, a wonderful production. Thank you again, Marjorie. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. By the way, telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to chat with me, I would be delighted to chat with you and light up your life with a little intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Every country has its challenges and its dilemmas. And when I got Marjorie's material, I don't know what I was expecting. I've done interviews on the show with people that have developed rooftop gardens, which is just a wonderful, wonderful project. In New York, there were groups that started that up. But as I was saying, I had a conversation with someone just recently that said they would love to garden, but they didn't have any place for a garden. And we were talking, and I said, well, why don't you go to the local library and check out some information? And they talked about a parcel of land that apparently was owned by the county. And they said, wouldn't it be great if you could have your own little garden plot? You could go and you could mingle with other people that are gardeners, and you could have this interactive conversation, because there are those people that I know that are avid gardeners. They're absolutely wonderful. I am not an avid gardener, but I so appreciate the people that are. And there is something, as Marjorie said, that really enables you to gain a level of respect when you're growing your own food. Well, if we go into history, and we go into American history, and you go back to the period of the Depression and the Dust Bowl, and there was so much ignorance about how to till the land. We had weather changes that were occurring then, just horrific winds that came in and moved topsoil around the globe, literally, and we have areas of the country that were just devastated. Why? Because people didn't know how to cultivate, how to bring certain aspects of farming into the right positioning. What do you do? Well, every area is different. And some areas are going to be absolutely marvelous for growing certain things, and other areas are not. And that's where trade comes in. And if you go far enough back in history, even the Mayans got vegetables and different things from different places. People said, "What I can grow this, I can bring this to you." And trade routes were established through many different communities in these United States. And so much of that is being discovered today. Well, the reality is, if you go back far enough, a lot of cultures, a lot of civilizations died out because their agricultural positioning failed. They had to move to a different location. They had to move on. And today we have so much in the way of technology, but we have to understand the basics. And I think with young people, but I find this even with adults, they don't question where stuff comes from. It's just like it's supposed to be there, like someone's waved a magic wand. Well, that's not the case. We get vegetables from different countries around the world. A lot of the produce, a lot of what is brought into the United States is green when it starts out. It may be gassed. It is preserved in some way because fresh food is not going to stay fresh. It's going to decay. It's going to mold. If you don't believe me, just leave something out on your counter and just watch what happens. There's videos on this, and it's fascinating. All of the microorganisms that are in the air and around in our environments, we can't see them. They're there. This is food for them. So they're feeding, and it's breaking down the composition of what is, in one condition, healthy, good for us to consume, in another condition, it is not. So you have these things that when you can teach children about this, they're going to have a respect for farming and realize that we have to be aware of it. And the gardens are a great way to teach kids about how to connect with the earth. And I think it's a great way for adults, too. And I know here in the Pacific Northwest, we have lost so much of our farmland. So much has disappeared. Where we used to have beautiful farms, maybe the younger generation didn't want to be bothered with the farming. It's a lot of work, just like my guest was talking about. And so realtors have gone in. Don't blame them. This is an opportunity that opened because there was no one to carry it on. And that lush, rich farmland now is occupied by apartment buildings in many, many different areas or home development. And it's very important for us to know that having good agriculture is vitally necessary, not just to our own physical well-being, but to our economic well-being as well. Because when we cannot provide for ourselves, then we're going to find that we're not able to do other things either. It's a continuous connecting circle. It's fascinating stuff. And everything goes along with it. Conservation of water, keeping water healthy, being aware of how to take care of the land so that we don't poison it and poison ourselves. I mean, all of these things. So if you can, check out Marjorie Wildcraft's website again, Grow Your Own Groceries. www.donnasebo.com, because it really is something that's very, very special. Now, I want to let you know about my guests that are coming up. We have Don't Carve the Turkey with a Chainsaw. I love that title. Roger Frank is going to be my guest tomorrow. And we're not talking turkey in the sense of gobble, gobble. We're talking about relationships. And he just has a wonderful approach. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Lou Paradise. We're going to be discussing wellness, how you can make your life richer by being more alert and aware as to what you put into your body. And then John Packus. Now, John has done something regarding an engine that is able to run more efficiently than the Energizer Bunny. And this is a fictitious presentation, but it's loaded with facts. So we're going to have an interesting conversation with John. And then Russell Targ, a world-renowned expert regarding remote viewing. He is a scientist, physicist. He's a researcher. This man is wonderful. And he is going to be sharing with us points of information out of his book, The Reality of ESP. So we've got a wonderful lineup of people this week. I invite you to tell your friends and come along and join us. Well, I wanted to share a story with you. And by the way, if you want to give me a buzz, you can at 888-627-6008. I wanted to share with you a story about something that occurred here in the state of Washington. We're going to be traveling back to the month of January. In 1948, in Chehalis, Washington, there was a woman, Bernice Zykowski, and she was with a bunch of children. They were coming home from school, and they saw a man flying through the sky above them. Well, they were curious. They went out into their garden, and they found the man was hovering at about 20 feet over the barn, and he had long silver mechanical wings that were strapped to his shoulder, and he was controlling them. Now, this is back in 1948. He was controlling them via an instrument panel attached to his chest, and he was flying in an upright positioning. And then in Longview, Washington, 3 months later, James Pittman and Viola Johnson observed three men flying above the city. They could hear motors, but they couldn't see any devices connected to the people flying. The feet were sort of dangling naturally. And the man said, you know what, they appear to be wearing helmets, and they're observing things as they're going around. Again, this is in 1948. Now, in 1953, in Houston, Texas, there was a lady by the name of Hilda. She was visiting with two friends. They were sitting on the front porch of their apartment building, and it was in the early morning hours when it's cooler. Texas can really get hot. And she saw this big shadow across the lawn, and she thought, well, you know, maybe this is just a shadow magnification of something that's caught in a nearby streetlight. And then she said the shadow seemed to bounce upward into the country that was not too far away. And she said the shadow was a man. He was 6.5 feet tall. He was dressed in a tight-fitting black outfit. He even had a cape, and he had boots on, maybe something like you'd expect to see in a Marvel comic. There was a light that seemed to surround him, and big folded wings could be seen at his shoulders. And there was a witness that happened to be watching the same thing as Hilda was. She never found out the man's name and said, you know, this guy just disappeared. And we heard this sort of like a rocket sound. They tried to describe it, and then, boom, off this guy goes. And they just couldn't figure this out. Well, there's apparently something that's been seen before, because there's in recorded history in 1897 in Mount Vernon, Illinois, there was a town mayor and 100 citizens that saw someone, what they described as swimming through the air, we would call it flying through the air, that had a light on his back. Now, that wasn't the first report of this kind. That's right, we're going to step back a little bit further, because in Kentucky, In 1880, there is a record, a written record, of someone flying with a mechanical aid of some kind. Really makes you wonder, doesn't it? Here we have records on people seeing human beings actually flying through the air. It brought to mind the movie Rocket Man. Remember that movie that was, I think it was a Disney movie, and it was so well done. We're not the only ones. This isn't make-believe, and it isn't this one where you have this super difficult outfit that you put on. This, they saw the people actually flying. Makes you wonder who has this information, and why is it we haven't been able to bring it forward in a sophisticated way? Well, probably going to be seeing some more of these characters. Who knows? But that's a little tidbit on flying men and a little bit of history about the unusual. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for just a minute. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. And I'm going to finish up with, today I need to share the four signs, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, and Virgo. That's what we've got left for the 2012 summer horoscope. We've covered all of the other signs, so when we come back, I'll share that with you as well. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, quick like a bunny, let me give you a couple of the astrological signs. How about Gemini and Cancer? We are in 2012 summer horoscope. Well, if you're under the sign of a Gemini, by golly, you are just going to find that this summer is going to give you an opportunity to open up to new relationships in your life. And this is important to you. People are so important to you. And if you're wanting some love life, well, apparently you're going to have the opportunity for that. But the relationships with people that you have around you, I really think you're going to be appreciating more than ever before. Money. This is going to be very, very important to you because you're really working diligently to get yourself focused into an understanding about money, how to work with it more effectively and efficiently. And this is going to be extremely positive for you. If you are in a job environment and you are wanting to have a promotion, well, I think you're going to have a good opportunity at that. So give it your best, pay attention to details, and do what you need to do, and don't forget to take a break for yourself every once in a while because this is a very intense cycle for you. And you're going to have some delays. You need to know that if you have a particular goal or objective, or maybe you've got a series of them, focus on the top two and then allow that the others will fold in as you need to have them taken care of. But focus on your top two objectives. Keep your perspective. You're going to come out ahead. But there is something about setbacks and delays that could evolve here. I don't want you to be stymied because of that. Let's move along to the sign of Cancer. You need to be willing to take risks. Life is not a straight line. You're not going to find yourself being guaranteed assurances. You need to believe in yourself, and you need to invest in yourself, whether that is through education, practical experience, which is another form of education. Invest in yourself, and also look for those people that you really can say, I like the qualities that they have as a person. I want to be able to demonstrate those qualities. You need to evaluate what's most important to you. When it comes to money, you've got to have a tight rein on the dollar, because it's going to be very easy for money to go through your fingers like water. So if you got an inheritance of $35,000, you need to say, okay, I'm going to put half of it away and not touch it, and then I'm going to do this, this, and this. Take care of your bills. Otherwise, they're going to get out of whack. So be attentive to your money. Respect it, honor it, realize it's just a tool. Don't let credit charges take you over. You've got to pay attention. When it comes to your dreams and your aspirations, you're going to have to work for them. It's not going to be something that's just handed to you on a silver platter. So not only do you need to have faith and trust in yourself, but you need to understand that you may have to go an extra mile, maybe an extra 20 miles, to get that dream fulfilled. And it's going to involve discipline, dedication, and determination, the three Ds. Discipline, dedication, and determination. Well, the last two signs of the zodiac are going to be Leo and Virgo, and I'll share those with you tomorrow. I wanted to, I'm not going to be sharing a recipe with you today, but I probably will tomorrow. I've come across, there's so many good cooks in this world, and I don't have a lot of time to spend in the kitchen, but I will tell you what, there are so many wonderful people that do, and they take the time to write down recipes, and I'll be sharing some with you perhaps tomorrow. But I wanted to talk about a little girl named Maddie. Sometimes people come into life, souls, maybe that's how I should say it, souls come into life and they're not here very long. And they affect us in a very, very special way. And there's a little girl by the name of Maddie who touched so many lives, and I have a picture of her in front of me, and she is precious. She is absolutely precious. When Maddie was born, she was a preemie baby, only 3 pounds. She couldn't even breathe on her own. She was so tiny. She survived. She survived, and the family just absolutely were thrilled. This is a very loving family. Maddie had her first birthday. Everybody was just excited. Her mother had started a blog and was showing her picture. And then one night, Maddie was 16 months old. She began wheezing. Her mom had an emergency oxygen tank. They had to take her to the hospital. Maddie was just surprising everybody. She was playing. She was giggling. She was happy. Beautiful, beautiful baby. But her lungs just weren't strong enough. And it was at 6:57 p.m. that little Maddie was gone after she'd been in the hospital for a while. And it just affected everybody. Well, there was a real need for the mom to communicate. And there were a lot of people, when they saw that Heather's blog site had crashed, they decided to get together, and they used a signature color, and it was purple. And it's the signature color of the March of Dimes. And they started promoting, all of these people started promoting the awareness of the challenges when you have a baby that's premature. Took up collections. They ended up collecting $20,000 to send to this family. And Heather was just astonished. She said the grief was so intense, but the love and the caring of these people, they didn't even know. And their willingness to collect money to help them with medical bills just absolutely overwhelmed her. And she said, I need to be able to give back. So she launched what she called the Friends of Maddie. It's a nonprofit organization, started very small. And how they started is she started sending small essentials to parents with babies. Donations, though, were rolling in. Friends of Maddie began awarding grants to defray travel and lodging costs for families who had premature babies in the NICUs that were a long way from home. Heather today is now occupied full-time running Friends of Maddie, but she also has a wonderful child, Annabelle, that's with her now. She's 2 years old. Wonderful, wonderful baby. And they talk about little Maddie. And Annabelle recognizes her. And she says this is her big sister. But she said every time, Heather says this, she said every time her heart is aching, it heals at the same time a little bit more because she shares memory of her beautiful baby, Maddie, on her blog. And she said what came out of Maddie's passing was the awareness that we could help other families like ours. And Maddie is doing more for people than Heather could have ever imagined. And the love in their hearts for their child that's passed on is strong, but it is expanding and spreading in such wonderful ways to so many other people. One person can make a difference, even a baby that only was around for 16 months. You see, we're all linked, and there's something so special about the links that we have with people. And you never know how one person's sadness can turn into something that can touch the lives of thousands of people. You have that capacity. Remember that. No matter where you are, what your life is giving you, your life is richer than you could ever imagine. And every time you share a piece of yourself with someone in doing something, an act of kindness, educating, doing whatever it is that means the most to you. It could be painting a picture of a daisy. It doesn't make any difference. You make a difference. And it's because of that you need to realize it's important for you, just like my guest Marjorie today, to make your choices and to be an active part of life in whatever level moves you in a very special way. Thank you for being with me today. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Have an utterly magnificent day, and we'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.